Hello and welcome to Trek Companion. This is episode 341. I'm your host, Brian Williams.
I am Adam Caesar.
I'm Stephen Embry.
And today we're going to discuss the first two episodes of Discovery's fifth and final season, Red Directive and Under the Twin Moons. Here we go.
Star Trek Discovery Season 5 cast includes Sonequa Martin-Green as Michael Burnham, Doug Jones as Saru, Anthony Rapp as Paul Stamets, Mary Wiseman as Sylvia Tilly, Wilson Cruz as Hugh Culber, Lou DiBario as Adira Tan, Colm Keith Rennie as Raynor, and David Ayala as Cleveland Book Booker. Red Directive Season 5 Episode 1, original release date April 4th, 2024, directed by Olatunde Osunsamni. Written by Michelle Paradise. Guest cast include Oded Fehr as Charles Vance, David Cronenberg as Kovic, Annabelle Wallace as Zora, Tara Risling as Tarina, Eve Harlow as Mole, Elias Tuvexis as Locke, Emily Coots as Kayla Detmer, Patrick Kwok Chun as Gen Reese, Odin Oladejo as Joanne Owashikun, Orville Cummings as Lieutenant Christopher, David Benjamin Tomlinson as Linus, and J. Adam Brown as Fred.
On board a ship going warp speed, Captain Michael Burnham is hanging on to the outside of the hull and is excited by the turn of events. 4 hours earlier, the crew of the USS Discovery are sent to retrieve a mysterious artifact hidden inside an 800-year-old Romulan vessel, but find they're not the only ones on the hunt. Meanwhile, Commander Saru is offered the position of a lifetime.
Thank you, everyone, for gathering so quickly. We will be taking Dr. Kovic on a classified mission, and be advised, this is a red directive. We will be jumping to an uninhabited planet. Its gravitational well has turned it into a graveyard of sorts for debris of all kinds. Our target is a Romulan science vessel, last seen 800 years ago. A Starfleet probe just found it. There's an item on board that we cannot allow to fall into the wrong hands.
All right, we made it. Discovery's final season. Off delayed, right? I mean, I feel like I think they shot this like 2 years ago or something crazy, right?
Something like that, yeah.
I mean, the pandemic slowed everything down. We know the strikes happened. We know the fact that they canceled the show while they were in post, I believe. You know, they decided to give them a little time to not shoot like a whole extra episode, but shoot some scenes or something to close out the show, the storylines and stuff a little better. So maybe a few scenes or something. We're not exactly sure the scope of that, but it was definitely not a full episode, but it was definitely something that they had to write and get most of the cast back together up in Canada to shoot and all that. So all these reasons, there has not been Discovery on the air in, I believe, about 2 years, which was the last time we talked about it, I feel like, because we did season four live. And that's exactly what we're going to do for the fifth and final season. Red Directive. No relation to the Red Angel, was it? Or that was a couple seasons ago? Something like that?
Right.
At least that we know of. maybe there is a relationship. Maybe they call it that for that reason. I don't remember. I don't think we've heard the term Red Director before, have we?
No.
They talked about it like we have, but it sounded foreign to me. Steve, you were just commenting as we were starting. You were very excited. Why don't you kick us off on Discovery Season 5 for the last time we'll talk about the beginning of a new season of Discovery.
Well, yes. So I was being a bit facetious. The this episode may be a perfect example of a conglomeration of tropes, borderline cliches put together to make something happen. It's almost like there's all these ideas. They just jumble them into a thing. They spit them out, and here we go. Right now, as always, the acting is great. The the special effects are top notch. It's something. It's like a spectacle to watch. You know, it's not like it's painful, but there's nothing new here. Nothing different. It's the same kind of idea. I feel like I don't have a clear connection with these characters, even though now it's been like borderline 8 years or something since we've known these characters. And, it launches. We have this whole ride with, okay, let's reintroduce everybody. I mean, some of these things, I say tropes. I mean, they do take the time to, you know, let's remember where we are. Here's all the characters. Here's where they are. Here's, you know, their connections. They spend a lot of time in this episode and in the next one with Burnham and Booker and their relationship. I mean, and that's fine, but it doesn't, it seems more time warranted than what should be. They have, it's very plot driven. That's another thing that's been absolutely consistent across most of this series, is that it's very step, step, action, action, plot, 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 plot. And the characters are secondary, and that's, and I think that's what, why this series suffers. I will say the, my high point in this episode was when the Soong type android, the synth, started using all this lingo from, and my wife is a speech language pathologist. So I've never seen her so excited in a Star Trek episode watching it. It was just like, she's correcting him and enjoying the banter and all this stuff. So that was fun. But yeah, you know, it's here we go. It's a launching this new season. There is a fun thing for fans and the, you know, canon and this kind of stuff. You know, it feels like the kind of thing we've seen in Discovery up to now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we weren't surprised, but Discovery's been very consistent. Definitely seasons 2 through 5. That's what the show became. But I mean, even 1. Kind of, yeah, but just to a lesser extent, as far as we're going to have a season-long big single story arc here. It's there's a MacGuffin, it's kind of an Indiana Jones-ish sort of thing. It feels a little bit like somebody said, hey, remember that one episode of Next Gen that had a cool story? Let's do that, but stretch it out over a dozen episodes or 10 or whatever it is.
I think we said that when we watched that episode.
It sounds like a fun drinking game or something.
But it would be funny if we went back and listened to us talking about that Next Gen episode. And we're like, oh, they should do a whole season of this. That would, yeah. Then I put my foot in my mouth.
I do remember us talking about that episode. I don't recall it being that. None of us thought it was a great episode.
Yeah,
It had a lot of lost opportunity.
It's
there.
A really cool idea and a cool, like, you know, story. Paragraph synopsis kind of thing. The actual realization was fine. I haven't watched it since we talked about it 10 years ago or whatever that was.
I think I remember we all felt like there was something lacking from that episode, because we only got like about, you know, they spent the whole episode, you know, this, it feels like this season's going to be like that episode. They're going to spend the whole season chasing down this artifact and these you know, people who created life, and we're going to get like maybe 10 minutes in the last episode of what they are. So it's going to be like the Next Gen episode. You know, they spend the whole episode on this treasure hunt looking for these guys, and, you know, then we get like, you know, 30 seconds right at the end of them.
Well, maybe not, but since we'll, you started, when you, what are your first thoughts here besides that?
Each season of Discovery is a ride. This is the show it is. I mean, you know, I think every season's a ride. It's like a roller coaster ride. You know, you get on, it's fun, it's got action. I will say these first two episodes, they feel calm, whereas I know in the past, like when we get going in Discovery, it's just like you're almost on the edge of your seat the whole time. I feel like in these two episodes, the pacing was slower for the audience. I don't mean to say slow in a derogatory way, because it was nice. You could keep up with what they're trying to do. You did have, you know, you had a little bit more, you know, character stuff in between. So I felt like the pacing had calm down a little bit, and that's gotten better since they've gotten to this, you know, timeline. I'm sorry, it still bugs me that they're 800 years in the future. That, I know each of us have our own reasons behind that, but I mean, it's just, to me, it's just ridiculous. But okay, put that aside. It's a clever way. You know, we've been seeing this in past Star Trek series here recently. It's a click, you know, using this old episode from Next Gen, bringing it all the way in here, kind of gives more of the traditional fans, I think, more of a reason to kind of be interested in. So it's a clever way to get fans like us involved, and, you know, fans who, new fans of the show. I mean, they should still be fans, because the show is still kind of the same. It's, you know, treasure hunt to, you know, stop the end of the universe. And that's what it feels like we're getting into again.
At least, I mean, I appreciated that Burnham seemed to be having fun. One of my issues with maybe previous seasons, it was so heavy. It was so, like, serious and just painful, you know, and she's immediately having fun. She's screaming for joy, riding on the top of that ship at warp. It doesn't seem terribly consistent with what we've heard, by the way. She could just let go and then she slides out of the warp bubble or something. I mean, and she's fine. I guess that's my point. It seems like that's something that maybe your body wouldn't put up with real well. But
they're very sturdy suits. These
yeah,
are.
that's probably it.
They're those year 3000 suits.
Right. Well, at any rate, I did enjoy that. You know, they're definitely trying to have, they're trying to do the same show, but maybe have a little bit more fun. You know, we'll talk about that in the next episode even more, I think. There's still plenty of serious stuff, but there's not, so far, there hasn't been anything that was like super heavy-handed serious. So we meet the new character. Oh, by the way, Cronenberg's in this episode. Woo! Automatically get an extra point for that. Automatic. We do meet a new character. What's his name? Callum Keith Renee, the Battlestar guy?
What number was he?
Oh, gosh. Don't spoil it. He's only 20 years old. He's Captain Renner? Is that his name?
Yeah, Renner's the character. Yeah, looking for the actor, yeah.
What do we think of him? Of course, we'll talk more about him in the next episode when we see where his character's going to fit in. But he didn't seem to have too much here. He seemed like he was just there to kind of cause some drama with Burnham. You know, he's the one who initiates that fires on that cave that apparently gives Maul and Locke the idea to cause an avalanche. That avalanche definitely goes very, very, very far. But they come up with a clever way just to kind of angle the starships into the ground. And
well, as we've said before, you get bogged down in techno-scientific crap when the episode's not that hot. And that's what I couldn't help but think. It's like, wow, these shields, they're like flying way faster than the speed of light through space and deflecting all this stuff. But it takes two ships to stop an avalanche on a planet. That's, I don't know.
An avalanche that has traveled very, very far. So far that they're driving at high speeds for minutes.
Yeah. That's an avalanche to beat all avalanches.
Yeah.
Steve, they were ordered to work together, so I mean.
Right, they had to find some reason, but I, you know, I like the character. I think the actor did better than the writing, as is often the case with this series. You know, I mean, I like what he's doing. I like the notion, but some of the writing, and it feels forced, right? It feels like they're trying to say, "Here's what we're trying to do, and we're going to step and do it," and it feels a little unorganic or something, but. I like the guy. I like the acting.
Well, we bring back Pooker. Honestly, it's been so long that I don't exactly remember, but like, he did something that we thought was practically unforgivable, right? That's what
he worked together with the one guy to
bad guy dude.
Yeah, to kind of mess things destroy up
the,
there
and destroy the other creatures.
Antics.
That's right, because they destroyed his planet or something. Maybe
they wanted to commit reverse genocide, if you will.
Got it. Right. Yeah, genocide. That's kind of hard to come back from. Got it. Okay. Seems like he's mostly back by the end of the next episode. We get Tilly. Tilly also finds a way back onto the show. Good. She has a fun little intro there where she's, I think, being hit on, maybe.
Kind of. It's very odd. Yeah. This they're
very, very flirty
flirtation, and they're back at her place, and then that also feels like a drunken rant or some kind of flirty thing. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. But she's as Tilly as ever. I've always mm-hmm. liked her. I've liked the performance. I like the character. Maul and Locke seem, I don't know, they're pretty standard TV courier-y people.
They have the, what is it, the bandits on the, what's the movie I'm thinking about with Warren Beatty?
Like Bonnie and Clyde?
Yeah, they kind of have a Bonnie and Clyde feeling. I can't believe that slipped my mind. That comes, I think that becomes more apparent in the next episode. We get a little bit more in the background.
So let's talk about this, you know, this, the progenitors storyline. Is that what they called them in the Next Gen episode? I kind of don't remember.
They did. In that episode, they did refer to them as that. Yeah.
So we have this 800-year-old Romulan ship and Romulan body that has the MacGuffin. And the MacGuffin is that this Romulan, apparently, after that Next Gen episode, he figured out how they created life, and that's the super powerful thing that's all super scary. Is I got that right?
Right. I guess like creating life beyond what the Genesis thing does, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, their technology, I guess, is kind of what I've garnered from this.
Did they like just literally create? I thought they like seeded DNA or something. I thought
my impression
different.
Was that this was a fun way to say, why do all the aliens look the same on Star Trek?
It's, yeah, but you know, it wasn't like, that we went and we put little babies on all these planets. I thought that was like they seeded the.
Right. I got that impression too, that there was something that they shot into the planet or something. And now that it evolves over the next billions of years, it will
Yeah.
You know, yeah, something.
Seed life. Yeah.
Okay. But this must be something different than that, because this is so super powerful and scary, and they can't let this power fall into the wrong hands.
I guess.
Yeah, that's where we're at the moment.
Okay, well, I'm sure there's going to be...
Through these first two episodes, yeah, I just think their technology can't fall into the wrong hands.
I'm sure we're going to find out a lot more about that. I'm sure.
You would hope so.
This knowledge is that this ship exists has been classified for centuries. Like, we knew this ship was out there, and it had the secret of how to find this technology, and it was on that ship, and we just lost track of that ship?
That is unclear.
Okay. All right. So, again, maybe we'll get more. I'm sure we'll get more info about that.
And so, was this, what else I didn't get, was this Romulan scientist around the same time as Picard? Did he just pick up after they
said it was him in the background of that picture.
Oh, yeah.
They zoomed into that one still. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess Romulans lived quite a while, so it could have been 100 years or so after. Yeah, a little bit of that backstory is a bit sketchy.
Okay. Well, like I said, I'm sure we'll find out. There was one like just technical thing that kind of there was a moment when they did split screen. Have we ever in the history of Star Trek seen any television or movie do split screen? I'm trying to remember.
No. I honestly got the impression that somebody thought this would be fun and clever and cute, and they just did it.
The first thing, it's like two people, and you're like, oh my gosh, that's split screen. And then they add Booker, and it's like a three-person split screen.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I didn't think this was terrible.
No.
It's fine. I mean, if I like this show, I think I would like this episode. I think I'd be fine with this storyline and all that stuff.
Well, I think they did what they needed to do. I think they know there are a lot of people out there like us who are big Trek fans who are not particularly thrilled with the show, maybe. Maybe that's not the right word. Maybe that's a little harsh. But, I mean, you know, they've thrown in some nuggets for the hardcore fans with, you know, referencing Next Gen and going back and
sure. Kind
of mixing it in. They have, you know, I feel like they've slowed it down a little bit, so we're not in this, you know, runaway train right from the beginning.
Yeah, like the Michael Bay kind of crap that I can't stand. I don't really feel like that's here. I would rather have these two episodes today, 7 days a week, than some of the episodes of this show that I've really been hard on.
I agree.
You know, it's not nearly as bad as many of the episodes. And I mean, if the entire season is like these episodes and no worse, then okay.
Yeah, it feels like they looked at Strange New Worlds and saw the pacing worked better on that show, and they're like, well, how can we incorporate what Discovery is and kind of slow things down a bit? And so far, I think that's the positive, that, you know, and I mean one of the highlights of this show is just it looks so phenomenal. I really love the music, the editing, the production value is just, it's top notch. It's fun to watch just for that. You know, for those of you out there listening, you know, we're pretty critical of Discovery, and I think rightfully so, but I still have fun watching it just for the production value alone.
Yeah, I mean,
and the acting, you know, the characters and the acting is good too. So
that said, there's a reason I'm glad we're doing this live. I think if this was the second time I was watching it, we were talking about it, a harder time. But
yeah,
like we've said, I mean, if the show was getting great ratings, they wouldn't be ending it after, right, you know, 60 episodes or whatever. So everybody's back. I like the uniforms. Uniforms look cool.
Yeah.
What is this episode about? A red directive.
Discovery's always been the hardest show to peg down on what they're trying to say. But if you look at this show, if you want to try to find something, you know, with Saru, you know, the position that he's been offered, you know, people, you know, kind of growing into their lives and moving on, we're kind of getting set into that. Booker, you know, having to, you know, deal with what he did and trying to make that right. So there's, you know, like you said with Burnham, you know, it seems like she's having fun. So like people kind of, to me, that's kind of what I took. It's like, it feels like all the characters kind of each know themselves better as people. So that's kind of what I took from this show. What did you take, Steve?
We have seen this series is difficult to nail down what each episode is trying to say. And oftentimes with a series, you know, the first episode of the season or the finale are often difficult. even more so difficult to nail down. But I think they did a fair job in reintroducing, like, let's reset where everything is with this. But I don't really have anything concrete for what they're trying to say in this. You know, I mean, it might be a little bit of a general notion of, you know, resetting so we can move on to the next stage in our existence or something, but it's kind of a stretch. I don't think this episode is really having a moral or something.
That's Discovery. Discovery's been the hardest show to do this with, because the season is such an arc. It's almost easier to at the end of the series to be like, okay, what were they trying to say here and do? So maybe we'll get there as time goes by.
That's fair. All right, let's do 6 degrees for Red Directive. Steve, Eve Harlow plays Maul, one of two thieves / couriers looking for the MacGuffin. In 2020, she appeared in the short-lived series Next. That show was created by Enterprise's Season 4 showrunner. Name him.
Crap.
We lost him last year, I believe it was.
Yeah. That fact entered my head immediately when you said that, but his name is not coming into my head.
Next is, you know, his last show.
Right.
Was his last show.
I don't think I'm going to be able to come up with his name right now. I'm sorry.
Adam?
Nil Nada. I don't know.
Manny Coto.
Of course. Yep.
All right. 0-0. Moving on.
Under the Twin Moons, Season 5, Episode 2, original release date, April 4th, 2024. Directed by Doug Aronofsky, written by Alan McElroy. Guest cast include Oded Fehr as Charles Vance, Chela Horsdahl as Leira Rilek, Annabelle Wallace as Zora, Eve Harlow as Mol, and Elias Tufexis as Locke.
Captain Burnham gazes out at the stars from her ready room aboard Discovery, reflecting on philosophical questions about her purpose and meaning behind humanity's existence after learning about the progenitor's tech that these race of ancient beings used to design life itself. Now with Saru's last mission as her number one, the team ventures to a seemingly abandoned planet to hunt for what might be the greatest treasure in the galaxy.
I want you to be my number one.
You get knocked in the head with one of those statues?
You didn't have to help us today, but you did because the mission matters to you. Starfleet and the Federation matter to you. And I see how you're looking out at the stars. We both know you're not ready to hang it up.
It's an interesting offer. But Vance wouldn't let me back on a ship unless it was a garbage scow.
I already spoke to Vance. He backs my choice. I got a second chance once. This is yours.
All right, Adam, kick us off on Under the Twin Moons.
We didn't get into the last episode, but obviously, you know, Saru's getting married. So that's exciting for Saru. He's fallen in love and, you know, he's going to spend the rest of his life with the Vulcan. So that's fun. So, but that sets us up into this episode with Saru talking with Burnham there, beginning the episode, and they're talking about, you know, this is the last mission, and he's going to be taking on this ambassador role at Starfleet. So he will no longer be the number one for Discovery, which brings us to Captain Raynar's, I guess, inquiry, it kind of feels like, about what happened in the last episode with the avalanche and the ships having to save this colony and all the political headache that's caused. So we see that Captain Raynar's from this I gathered Captain Raynar was going to be a bigger part of the show instead of just kind of like a one-off antagonist. So, and they made him interesting in this in that opening scene. He was very blunt and bold with the president and the admiral. So sounds like he's going to be an interesting character. And then, you know, we kind of get back into what this series is about, you know, searching for this Romulan scientists' information, the tech from these progenitors. We get more from Book. He gets a little bit more involved in this episode, learning about these what are their names? The two couriers,
and that Maul and Locke.
Maul and Locke, and that it turns out that Book might be related to Maul. So yeah, I mean, again, the pacing in this, I like the pacing so far. I mentioned that in the previous episode. It doesn't feel too fast. Doesn't feel like they're trying to do too much at this point. So yeah, as far as we go, I like this episode a little bit more than the first one, but I'll hear you guys' thoughts.
I liked that Booker immediately told Culber that he thought he knew Maul. I was briefly afraid there. Oh, is this going to be, he's going to keep a secret again? I just don't think I could handle that anymore. They've already they're putting trust in him again. And I just don't want him to be that way. The bad guy, kind of secretive guy, even for a second. I don't think there's any room left to do that. So I was glad. I was very glad to see that he immediately told Culber there was no thought to, there was no hesitation there.
They kind of teased it there with a little bit with him walking out of the room, the mood. It's like, and then
yeah, he goes and you're discovers right. That's what... probably why I started worrying about it. But once he realized it, then there was no hesitation. Steve, your first thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is one of the better episodes of Discovery for quite some time. And I think a lot of it is that it has something to say. We'll get to that point. I do think what it does kind of reveal what Discovery suffers from, and that is that it's very inefficient. It feels like it takes a long time to get anywhere. It's like what you described with Book, and okay, we have this kind of note, oh, he's something, he's despondent, he's leaving the room, and we come back to that. We've seen in a lot of cases the some of the Trek series are able to tackle these notions and get to the point quicker. And it's not like I don't want to spend time with the characters. It just feels like there's a lot of wasted time in this. It feels like you're just kind of meandering. And what's the point of this thing? I mean, at least this particular episode gets to a point. I feel like it gets to a point and it has something to say, but it does take a long time to get there.
That whole sequence down on the planet, that's a lot of action-y stuff that is not what the episode's about at all.
Right. Right.
And if you took all of that out, it would have zero effect. I'm positive I've said this about this show before. If you took, oh gosh, I just had bad flashbacks about the Klingon-y guy person. Oh my gosh. I'm sure I've said this before. If you took all that crap out, it would have zero effect on the show, the story, the characters.
I would disagree a little bit in this case, because that's what they use for Reiner to get his trust. Because he came in and he helped them, help Tilly, and so I mean that to me that's kind of what that was all about. But it was way too long. I mean they had a lot of character interactions.
Yeah, but I remembered it. Admittedly, not a good episode. But there was that episode of Next Gen very early. The arms dealer guy. They go down on the planet, and the planet's attacking them. You remember that one? I can't remember the name of that one. It's not a great episode because it was an early one. But I remember on that one, that was the story. Being on that planet trying to survive that stuff, that was the story of the episode. Here the story is, that's not it, right? So it just feels like unnecessary. I mean, even the Renner stuff, he could have had that input in a different way.
Brian, we have to have treasure hunting in Discovery.
Okay, but
there's always clues to find in Discovery.
I'm not against that they found the clue and that they outsmarted Maul and Locke by realizing the clue was underneath this statue. It's everything getting them to that point once they landed on the planet that I was just like, all right, get on with it. I mean, this isn't, I don't know.
No, I agree with you, Brian. It was overly long and it seemed kind of silly how long it took them to kind of kill off these probes.
I probably cut you off there, Steve. I was agreeing that this is a facet of this show that can be difficult.
Yeah. But this what we've discussed here is relevant, because I think that the notion of Reiner having input into that storyline is the whole point of it. It's just they did it very inefficiently. I mean, there's probably a million ways to do that without doing it like they did. And I do applaud them for having something to say in this and having a focus. It's just that it's almost like there's kind of this, they feel like they have to put a certain amount of visual effects action in a certain episode or something. It's like they must do it. And And in fact, it makes you just you look at your watch and say, what's going on here? Why are we taking all this time?
Original series, they clearly felt like they had to make Kirk physically fight somebody almost every episode. Those fights were very short. The longest one ever was still very, very short.
There's a couple of technological things. Like I mentioned in the first episode, I'm still annoyed by the 800 years, but
always
the transporter still annoys me that they can just transport at will whenever they want. Okay, whatever. But some of the cool things that I like the armbands with stuff coming up. They look like they regenerated their phasers. So those are some kind of new things that we got out of that scene.
Yeah, that's another good example of dwelling on these kind of little things when an episode isn't so hot. Is in the former episode, and something we didn't get to is like if they can do all this stuff, why can't they just shoot like phasers out of their eyes or something? Why can't they just like their ears just pop phasers? Sure. I mean, if that's what's going on here,
it kind of does that,
right? Then why is that not a thing? Why are we having phasers on self-destruct mode and throwing them into things and doing this stuff?
It seems so 24th century, Steve. I don't know.
It's so 800 years ago.
Yeah, if we can like materialize the phaser at will and then use it as its own weapon to make it blow up and then just rematerialize another one, why can't we just dematerialize those probes that are shooting at them? I mean, it seems like there's a point when it's just magic and it's like the end of Into Darkness breaking stuff.
I think that's the problem they have with this timeline being 800 years in the future. Like, okay, we can't get too crazy and make them omnipotent. We also have to make them relatable to the Star Trek people in the 24th century. So it's just a conundrum that they created for themselves, and it's not ever going to be fixed because they're 800 years into the future.
Blue DeBario. I feel like I remember the name Blue DeBario because Blue DeBario is a memorable name. But what is Blue DeBario's character's name?
Okay, yeah, Trill. So her first name is Adira.
Adira gets a moment in this episode talking about Gray and conflicted feelings about maybe being happy alone. There was something kind of interesting there. I feel like most everybody in these first two episodes gets a moment. Maybe not so much Culber and Stamets. Stamets has that brief thing at the beginning of the first one where he talks about maybe he's useless now or something because they're decommissioning the Spore Drive. No, not decommissioning Discovery. They're stopping down research about it. So that's what
I was moving on with another alternative for that kind of
That was kind of quick and didn't make sense either.
But basically, you know, Culber and Stamets didn't get. I'm sure their moment is coming. Their moments are coming. But I like that moment with Adira. Tilly obviously had a couple of different moments. So, you know, sometimes it feels like we've seen that before. Like, you know, Renner is the new character. He's the new toy that the writers can play with. So he gets a couple of scenes. Like, I always remember we talked about DS9 season 7 had an abnormal number of Ezri episodes. Not that they were bad or anything, but it was just like the writers had a new toy, so everybody wanted to play with it. But I'm sure all those other characters, you know, all that stuff is coming. I agree with you, Steve, that I like the actor a lot for Renner. And there's a moment I want to point out at the end of this episode. You see it coming, you know, that Burnham's going to ask him to be her XO. But I like that before she does that, she engages him in conversation, and he does specifically express remorse that those settlers nearly died.
Right. I agree.
That's what makes that work for me. So that's good writing, right? If that hadn't been there, if she had just walked in and said, I want you to be my XO, I think that would have hurt her character and his.
Yeah. Agreed.
So I like that moment. I like that she's talking to him. You realize she's talking to him for a reason, and she's bringing this situation up, despite the fact that he says he doesn't want to talk about it. He wants to be left alone. She's bringing it up because she wants to get that out of him. And, you know, you get the impression that if he had stuck to his guns and said something just like he had said in his, not tribunal, whatever it was, the hearing, that maybe she would not have made that offer to him. And I actually like that moment, like when his answer, his way of showing her that he's interested was to like zip up his jacket, like, let's get started. I like that. Yeah, you know, that was cool.
Well, it looks like he's going to be an interesting character. Just because kind of Because he was in the first episode, I just kind of felt like he was kind of a one-dimensional antagonist. And you know, obviously there at the end of the episode, he's like, I'm not a yes man. And she's like, that's what I'm counting on. So sounds like we'll get some good scenes between him and Burnham.
I'm sure there's going to be drama and arguments, which is good. How do we feel about Saru leaving? A, do we really think he's going to be gone? I mean, Tilly was gone for pretty, she was pretty much gone once she left until I think the last episode she came back. That was it. Do we really think Saru was gone?
Hard to say because, you know, they did not think this was the last season of Discovery when they were shooting it. And so I don't know where they're going to go with that, you know, as far as Saru's absence during this season or lack of absence, whatever that is.
And they kept Tilly's absence a secret mm-hmm. in season four. I remember being very surprised that she was just gone.
Right, right.
So it's certainly possible that Saru is just gone, but I think I'll be surprised if he is, since he's such an interesting mm-hmm. character. You know, you can still have him on the show, and the Admiral's not on the ship, and he's on the damn show mm-hmm. all the time, right? So he could still be on the show and just not be on the ship, and you still get all the new, you get the new toy to play with as far as this new dynamic of this XO who is, you know, obviously going to fight with Burnham a little bit. That both things can be on the show. So I don't know. And I do like the character of Saru. I like his dead actor's performance is always great.
When they were in his quarters and he was talking about, you know, when he made the transformation, it just brought me back to that episode, how not good that episode was. It's like, oh, okay.
Booker analyzes Maul and Locke and says they're thrill-seeking lovers, I guess.
That's where I got the Bonnie and Clyde from.
Yeah, okay. And yeah, then we get the bit about him that he knows them, or at least her, which we already kind of talked about.
So the cousins, is that what's...
Right, his explanation sounded like one of those convoluted things, like uncle, step-uncle first removed from the... Yeah, yeah. I think.
Well, we realize why we got the Adira scene, because we are apparently going to Trill.
Mm-hmm.
We've already been to Trill on this show, right? That's where we...
Yes.
Yes. So we know what to expect there. Didn't they... I feel like they didn't join the Federation. There was something about them not being in the Federation now, or maybe they left, or but maybe now they're back post-burn or something. I don't remember.
Yeah, something like that. That sounds right.
So, sounds like that's going to be the next episode. All right, well, it culminates with, I think this is a map broken into five pieces, and the poem tells us where to go next. So, we've effectively set up the rest of the season. It's going to be this...
Another jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, Indiana Jonesy-ish thing, but more like the, you know, just like that Next Gen episode is just over a season instead of an episode, where they're following these pieces.
I will say this, thus far into these first episodes, whereas in past seasons that felt like the focal point of everything, this almost kind of seems to be like a little bit more on the back burner. I do feel like we're getting a little bit more character, a little bit, so far so good. So, like I said, it's not the second, like that's the plot. This is what the, you know, finding these pieces and finding what the progenitors are is the... what's moving the series, but it doesn't seem to be like it's the extreme focal point at this juncture.
Well, I mean, that's what the previous seasons did. And then as it went on, it became more and more about that. But we did, you know, we get plenty of character stuff. Saru's wedding thing, that was in the previous episode. Okay. Clearly that Saru and the Vulcan ambassador, their relationship advanced between seasons 4 and 5. So we didn't see that, but I remember liking it when it was hinted at. So no complaints here. I wonder if I actually get a literal wedding in this show. That'd be interesting. All right. What is this episode about? Steve, Adam always goes first, but Steve specifically said he had an idea this time.
You can go ahead, Steve. Let's break it up.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's one of these moments. Monumental things. Second chances. So obviously the most obvious example of that is with Rainer, and you know that he's fallen from grace, and he's being brought back and to serve a meaningful role and so forth. But it's kind of sprinkled throughout the episode in a variety of ways. This notion, I mean, we have Burnham references her history. We go back to the first and second season of this series, and the whole thing is, I mean, she was essentially a criminal. You know, they let her on the ship and they gave her an assignment, but you know, now she's the captain of the ship. I mean, so you know, that's definitely the theme here, is redemption, and everyone loves a redemption story. It's probably why this gets by and it's one of the less bad episodes, you know. But I think there's a whole lot of stuff and fluff like there is that doesn't make a lot of sense. But overall, I think the notion of redemption, at least they recognize that's a point and that's something they should focus on, and they stick with that. And I like this episode. I think it's one of the better Discovery episodes in recent memory.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's got redemption themes scattered all throughout it that Steve just mentioned. And you know, if you want to do some secondary things that they were trying to say, you know, you have Tilly who has seemed to have found herself, you know, teaching, you know, at the academy, you know, she got, you know, and she's having a hard time. You know, these are things that, you know, obviously there's been a lot of time that's passed by. She's been teaching for a while and she really loves it. And she said she's found her place, but, you know, they kind of give a reason for her being back here because she's having a hard time inspiring them into the, you know, for the reasons of these missions. And obviously, you know, we talked about Saru, you know, how these characters are kind of maturing into these lives that they've been dealt with in this, you know, future timeline. So yeah, kind of things coming together personally for each of these different characters.
You know, I gotta say again, I think the biggest improvement is the tone, and I hope they stick with this, and I hope it stays fun and just a smidge lighter. We probably didn't need to, even with what's here, maybe we didn't need to say the whole galaxy is at stake, whoever gets this is going to be, you know, it's some crazy powerful thing. I can imagine a variation on this where it didn't even need that and it could still be the same story, but I don't need to go down that road. I should just say I'm glad that the tone does seem to be different. I think that's a big improvement. I think that's going to make the whole season more palatable. Hopefully they'll stick with that. All right, let's do 6 degrees for Under the Twin Moons. An actual 6 degrees question, Adam.
Yes.
Elias Tuvexis plays Locke, one of two thieves / couriers looking for the MacGuffin. He previously played a character named Cold in the Discovery episode Context is for Kings. Cold was on a prison shuttle with Burnham. What season was that?
Prison. Season one?
Yep. I felt it was too hard if I just said the name of the episode. Like, I needed to give you some context, but anyway, maybe they made it too easy. Especially after Steve just said it. How far she's come, wasn't that?
Yeah.
When you use the name,
I was trying to think if it was a trick question. I was like, was she in jail in two or three? No, let's go with one. Mm-hmm.
That means Adam takes it for the day because nobody got the first question. Adam, the winner. All right. Discovery season 5, off and running. The final season. Whether or not you love Discovery, it's new Star Trek. That's cool. That's fun. I'm excited to have new Star Trek to watch. I really am. So that's what we're going to be doing for the next 10 weeks. All right. So we're going to be back in 2 weeks to discuss the next 2 episodes of Discovery Season 5. Until then, you can send us an email, trekcompanion@gmail.com. Our Twitter handle is @trekcompanion. Thanks so much for spending an hour with us. And until next time, take it easy.
Bye, guys.
See ya.
Stefan, I passed it.